استرات نقولي مازونغو دي دي جي مستر مكوبيلا دي دي جي I don't see the other DDG here. Apparently, Dr. Barnard is DDG. Okay, DDG Mbambo. The department staff, the members of parliament, Honorable Kamere, Honorable Sankile, Honorable Abrams, Honorable Van Lingen, the staff of parliament, welcome Mr. Apane. You are so much in Cape Town that I believe you are shouting now for the Western Province. You've left your allegiance in actual fact. He's left his allegiance of the Blue Bulls, Honorable Kamara, and is now shouting for Western Province and soccer. Soccer is left Kaizer Chiefs and is supporting Ajax Cape Town now. But, honourable members, it has been a phenomenal week for our sport. Pity about the Lions that has lost the trophy, the CTL 20 Championship trophy. But that you can expect from teams from the north. Teams from the south. Sorry for the Sharks. I hope he has no Shark supporters. Okay. Honorable Gamera, sorry about that. The rugby lesson that we have taught you guys in Kings Park, on your home ground, in shark weather. And we want to congratulate the Western Province rugby team. So, members and honorable members and the staff of the department, please don't go unnecessary. We want to join the parade of Western Province cricket, rugby. They are doing a parade with a curry cup. So, if you don't have a question, don't ask, don't look for one. Just ask what you've got on your mind. Today. Yeah, I'm Cape Town. Yeah, starting here. Role of Cape Town. Thank you, Honorable Abrams. That is, I'm just carrying out the mandate of the committee. It's not my mandate, Mazungu. It's the collective mandate of the committee. You heard what Honorable Abrams said. If you haven't got a question, don't ask unnecessary. Just ask. Don't give an answer first going to Kuduspoort, then go to Wilderness, then go to Zambia. Then go to Zambia. And yeah, and then come to Cape Town for the stay in Cape Town, answer the question, and that's it. We don't need the whole of South Africa. Honorable Van Lingen, we've got some apologies. I'll ask the secretary to just read it to us.
Mr. Khale and Mr. Nyambi.
The apologies of Mr. Miner is he's at the division of a Toro meeting in his province, division of revenue meeting. In his province is attending. Mr. Mguni, the brother of the doctor here, is getting married today. Madikhali is at the interfaith church service today. And Mr. Nyambi is not in Parliament. We don't know where he is. But honourable members and the department, we know each other. I'm not sure whether we should go for a round of introductions, Honourable Sinclair.
Chair, I just want to welcome a new member to our committee, Honourable Van Lingen.
Well, she's welcome. She's welcome. Now we've got Energy has sent us the annual report, and I hope members had a chance to work through the annual report. I only got mine on Friday, coming back from KZN, and Saturday was the rugby, so to be honest with you, I've worked through it, but not as fully, so we'll still come back with more answers, and we'll still call you back if there's anything else. that we need to do. So, Baba Mguni, take the process forward.
Sorry.
Let me also welcome his first meeting, Mr. Ludumo. I forgot to say him now again.
Supa.
Oh, Susupa. Mr. Ludumo Susupa, our content advisor, who has joined us from the 1st of October. Welcome to the committee, and we're looking forward to a very fruitful working relationship, but not just fruit, but labor as well. That goes with the fruit relationship, working relationship. And these are the energy people. You should take note of them, and this is the committee section. The committee members, you should also take very note of them. And please just check your phone, because Honorable Van Lingen has got a habit of phoning at 4 o'clock in the morning. Just watch out for that. Welcome, Mr. Susupa, to the committee. Baba Mguni, over to you.
Good morning, Chairperson, and the honorable members of the Select Committee on Economic Development. Once more, we'd like to thank you for the opportunity to present our annual report for 2011-12. But firstly, I thought maybe I should start by introducing formally the members of, you know, of my team, because the energy family has grown bigger. You know, as you know, I am actually DBG for Corporate Services. Next to me is Ms. Zungu, who is the Chief Operations Officer. Next to her is Mr. Matubela, who is DBG for Energy Policy and Regulation. DBG for Petroleum Products and Regulation. And then Dr. Wesley Barnett, who is DDG for Projects and Programs. And next to Dr. Wesley Barnett is Justin Daniel, who is Acting CFO. And on my extreme left is Mr. Ashwin Syme, who is the head of the Deputy Minister's Office. And next to him is Mr. Mbambo, that is Amele, who is DBG for Nuclear. And next to Mr. Mbambo is Sandile Ntanzi, who is head of the DG's office. And next to him is Mr. Ombi Apani, who is DDG for Energy Policy and Planning. And lastly is Mr. Rikas van Rensburg, who is the executive assistant in my office. Chairperson, formally I would like to also tender an apology for the minister and the deputy minister, who are both on official commitments, and also tender an apology for the director general, who is currently overseas on study leave, and the CFO, who's also has tendered an apology because she's also on study leave. Chairperson, I'll now deal with the presentation of our annual report. Maybe to give an outline, we'll deal with the department's planning for the year 2011-12, and we'll also deal with DOE's contribution to government outcomes, and we'll also deal with program performance in as far as administration is concerned, hydrocarbons and energy planning, and then as well as electricity, clean energy, and nuclear. Then we'll conclude, then take questions. Chair, by way of introduction, you'll remember that in November 2010, we did go to the strategic planning session, which we normally do annually in preparation for the ensuing year. Then during this process, we came out with seven strategic objectives which are aligned to the government outcomes, as well as took into consideration the new government outcomes-based planning approach. And our strategic plan and annual performance plan were based on several assumptions that included the availability of financial and HR resources. We did this because by then we were still a new department, so we had to ensure that we make it happen with what we have at our disposal. As the Department of Energy, we are committed to the provision of an enabling and a platform for other sectors to speed up economic growth and transformation, to create decent jobs and sustainable livelihoods. During the year under review, Chair, I must say the department has operated within an environment where the credibility of the South African energy policy trajectory was enhanced by the independent power producers procurement process that we painstakingly championed, which I must add has received acclaim far and wide. We now need to ensure that we collectively give it the final push. On the geopolitical front, we had to contend and develop a response plan to the sanctions by the US and the EU on the Islamic Republic of Iran. The vulnerability of the refining sector was exposed with a number of refinery shutdowns, which diverted some of our attention into monitoring the contingency plan. Chairperson Lagarde indicated we've tried our level best to align our strategic objectives with the government outcomes. So the slide that you see there, you know, displays exactly that. We've identified as one of the department's strategic objectives the energy supply is secured and demand is well managed, that is aligned to government outcome number 4, then an efficient, competitive and responsive energy infrastructure network is aligned to government outcome number 6, improved energy regulation and competition, which is aligned also to government outcome number 6, efficient and diverse energy mix for universal access within a transformed energy sector, which is also aligned to government outcome number 4, then environmental assets and natural resources protected and continuously enhanced by cleaner energy technologies, which is aligned to government outcome number 12, and mitigation and adaptation to the impacts of climate change, which is aligned to government outcome number 10, and good governance for effective and efficient service delivery, which really cuts across the board. It's aligned to government outcome number 12. Chair, I'll now deal specifically with the focus areas for corporate services as a branch, and then thereafter I'll allow other support services components to make presentations on what has been achieved and not achieved, and what we are doing to ensure that we deliver, you know, on those key performance areas that we've identified for ourselves. In as far as corporate services area is concerned, our main focus is to provide a support service in as far as human resource and auxiliary services is concerned, the provision of a legal support service to the ministry and the department, as well as the provision of communication and acknowledgement support services to the department. In as far as our key achievements, and partially achieved or non-achieved areas is concerned, Chair, I must indicate that the HR plan of the department was finalized and implementation has commenced. Remember that this is a key document that guides, you know, the provision of human resource support services for the whole department, and it is in line with the directives from the Department of Public Service and Administration. Chair, like I have indicated, we have embarked on a restructuring of the department, but because of the prolonged consultation process, we could not finalize this in time because we had to consult with everybody in the department to ensure that you know, the structure that we put in place for delivery of services, you know, is being owned by everybody in the department. And that delay has also meant that we could not finalize framework for occupational classifications, But at the moment, as we are speaking, the structure has been finalized, and we hope that the other ensuing processes will be rolled out with ease, because everybody has ownership to the structure of the department. We could not also do the matching and placement of staff, which was delayed due to the prolonged consultation process with employee organizations and other employees in the department. Chairperson, we finalized all HR policies on target, and implementation is ongoing. The turnaround time for the filling of vacancies has improved to a remarkable 3 months average throughout the year, and interventions to maintain a vacancy rate of 9.6% against the approved cabinet baseline of 15% were also implemented. Chairperson, we are required to submit all performance agreements by the 30th of May. This was done, as well as the other work plans for all employees in the department. And in those instances where people had not delivered or signed their performance agreements with their supervisors, we have taken appropriate disciplinary actions, and relevant sanctions have been imposed for non-compliance. The performance reviews of all staff members were finalized before the end of June, and the public service wellness framework was approved and implemented in the first quarter of 2011. The skills audit and plan were also finalized and submitted to the Department of Higher Education and CETAS as required and on time, and the HRD strategy and training plan were finalized before end of June 2011 and implemented accordingly. We have managed to train 443 employees in both administrative and functional areas of the department. You'll remember that the total staff complement of the department is 514, because we've always been operating with somehow skeleton staff because of lack of funding. And the DOE has overall exceeded the 50% representation target of women, and all presidential hotline cases were resolved. That is, all those that were reported through the presidential hotline. Chairperson, we do have a records management plan. It is approved by National Archives, and we are in the process of implementing it at the moment. And the risk, the security risk management plan is in place, and implementation is also ongoing. We have crafted all standard operating procedures, as well as a contingency plan, and we are in the process of implementation. Chairperson, you'll remember that previously we were housed at Travena campus. We have now secured alternative office space at the old land bank building, and this was done through the Department of Public Works, and DOE has settled in. On the legal services front, all legal requests were finalized and the target of 50% exceeded, with 66% of requests received dealt with within a specified time frame. The 50% target was set because of capacity constraints that we had at the time when we were busy at our strategic planning session. Chair, to proceed, I'll deal with communication matters. We do have a draft communication strategy, which we've implemented. And due to capacity constraints, Chair, we couldn't finalize the strategy because of, at senior management level, the two positions of chief director and director were vacant. At the moment, the positions have been filled, and we are now finalizing the communication strategy. The communication policies and procedures could not be finalized because of capacity constraints, as I've indicated, and external projects, including public participation programs and DO events, were continuously managed, and the daily and weekly media monitoring and liaison services were provided as required, and internal communications plan was also developed and implemented. The event events calendar was developed and implemented accordingly, and the marketing, advertising, and branding plan was developed and implemented according to plan. The publication services were also established, developed, and implemented, and the stakeholder management plan was developed and implemented, except the strategy because of lack of capacity to do same in the relevant units. The draft knowledge management strategy was developed, but approval was delayed due to planned relocation, as I've indicated, to the new building and lack of office space. Chair, we did have challenges, although some, you know, I did allude to earlier on. We could not reach, you know, a target of 2%, but currently we've developed, you know, a strategy, and the strategy has been approved by the Director General, and we are in the process of implementing the strategy to ensure that we reach the target of 2%, which has been set by national government. The implementation of the structure at macro-organizational level, as I've indicated, has posed challenges relating to reporting as well as lines of authority. This will now be addressed through the matching and placement of the affected employees following the restructuring process. And this was done, you know, following a decision by the leadership of the department after we had finalized the organizational structure. The establishment of the Knowledge Management Center, as well as the development and implementation of a strategy and plan, this challenge has also been addressed following the relocation of the DOE to the new premises. Like I've indicated, that at the old Trevena campus we didn't have a sufficient space, and this was slightly delayed, but because we now have alternative office space, we have made provision for that. I'll now allow the acting CFO to proceed, then he will be followed by Nisungu. Justin Daniel.
Thank you, Acting DG, Mr. George Mbuni. Good morning, Chair, and honourable members of the Select Committee on Economic Development. I will now present the report on the annual financial statements, as well as the report of the Auditor General for the financial year 2011-12. The 2011-12 year under review was the second year that the department has been operating as an independent department. However, there has not been any significant increase in the department's budget allocation from its first year of operation in 2011. The department only received a 12% increase in the second year, but of that 12%, 10.6% went to transfers and subsidies, and 1.4% was retained or went to the department's operational budget. The department faces the challenges of an inadequate baseline allocation, and these challenges, as resulted from the split of the Department of Minerals and Energy, they still remain, but there is ongoing engagements with National Treasury and DOE, both in terms of looking at the baseline as well as the reprioritization of the current budget allocation. If we can go to the next slide. The department had a total budget of $6.2 billion in the 2011-12 financial year. And of this $6.2 billion, 95% of the budget went to transfer and subsidies. Of the 95% that goes to transfer and subsidies, the breakdown is as follows. The INEP program received $3.2 billion. Transnet's new multi-product pipeline, $1.5 billion. Nexa, $586 million. The energy efficiency demand-side management receives $398 million. And the balance are transfers to the state-owned entities and other smaller programs. As mentioned earlier on, only 5% of the total budget is allocated to the department's operational needs, and this is a mere $305 million that is used internally. It should be noted that for the year under review, the department spent 99.6% of its allocated 2011-12 budget, and I will speak to that 99.6% or the remaining 0.4% as the presentation continues. Looking at the financial performance, the total revenue was 6.2 billion, 6207690. The split of the expenditure, the total expenditure is 6.17 billion, that's 6177662. We'll see that current expenditure, which is made up of compensation of employees and goods and services, is 341 million. The transfers and subsidies is the 5.8 billion. Expenditure on capital assets, 5 million, and a small amount for the payment of financial assets, rounding about 60,000. The surplus for the year under voted funds is the 26.6 million. So that is the 0.4% that was unspent at year end. And I will speak more on that as we continue. Just to focus perhaps on the major spending areas, Chair, the transfers and subsidies is the biggest spending area, and of a budget of 5.8 $4.1 billion, the department transferred 5.829 billion. That's 99.8% of the total budget. Compensation of employees was spent by a full 100% of it was spent. Goods and services of the 164,000, we spent 156,000. Payment of capital assets, we spent 4 million against 9 million. There is a reason for that as well. And again, the details of the unspent amounts will become clear as we move through this presentation. The next slide mainly depicts how the spending took place in terms of the different programs, and perhaps just at a high level to indicate that all programs attained high levels or maximum spendings, with amounts just going just around 96% and above of the total budget that was spent. But overall, at an average, was 99.6% of the total budget. So, in terms of the department's total spending being 6.174 billion, it had an underspending of 26.65 million. And of this 26.65 million, the next slide, of the 26.65 million that was unspent, 49% or at least half of it belonged to transfer payments, and the balance was in the current expenditure. And just to give an indication of how the breakdown of the 26.65 is made up, compensation of employees was almost fully spent, but goods and services was underspent by 8.55 million, transfer payments 12.95 million, and capital assets 5.13 million. When we speak about the amounts unspent, we need to take into cognizance that we're speaking about a cash basis of accounting system. And in the case of most of the amounts that pertain to the department, excluding the transfer payments, those were in fact fully committed at year end. It's just that the payment did not happen by year end, and a request for a rollover was done. So a rollover request was submitted to National Treasury for that fully unspent amount, and the entire unspent budget amount for goods and services and capital expenditure for the year was in fact also granted to us by National Treasury. The rollover was granted. Just to explain the unspent amount in goods and services, the 8.1 million, the department had by the 30th of March made effective payments for international membership fees. However, the process at the Reserve Bank did not happen by the 31st of March. It only happened around the 2nd or 3rd of April. So there was a timing difference on a foreign payment. However, that amount was, again, it was part of the 26 million that was given to us by National Treasury to offset that payment. So technically it was spent at year end. I mentioned that 50% of that related to transfer payments, and that amount of 11.8 million of the overall balance of 12.9 million within this category was attributable to funding specifically appropriated for EDI holdings, which monies were not transferred. And the reason for the monies not being transferred is because EDI had ceased operations and had sufficient funding to meet their obligations and other liabilities. However, a rollover request was submitted to National Treasury for this amount with the intention that this amount monies be directed towards the operational costs of the ADEM project. National Treasury viewed that favorably, and that was also approved in the 26 million rollover figure. In terms of the underspending on CAPEX, of the total of 9 million that was allocated, we had spent 4 million, but the balance could not be spent at year end because the department was in the process of relocation and there was a delay in the relocation program. However, all of the amounts were committed and the rollover of these funds was also approved by National Treasury, and these funds have been fully spent. The next slide is an interesting slide on the transfers and subsidies, which makes up the 95% of the department's budget. As you can see in the first column, there's a 5.841947 billion, and the actual expenditure is 5.828999. All the amounts were fully spent except the EDI holdings, which I alluded to earlier on, indicating that that money had been redirected to the ADEM project. And the amount that was not granted to us by National Treasury was the 1 million in relation to the local organizing committee 2010 World Cup. In fact, the budget was at 282 million, but the invoice came in at 281 million, so we had spent all that we could in terms of that. If we just move on to the top spending areas within the department, within its 5% of the total budget, compensation of employees accounts for the biggest spend of 184 million. We have travel and subsistence of 40 million, consultants and contractors and outsourced services of 36 million, lease payments mainly for the building, 28 million, and operating payments at 19.5 million. If we look at the statement of financial position, under assets and current assets, a very glaring figure there is the unauthorized expenditure of 14.8 million. And then the cash and cash equivalents of 11.8 million. And then under investments, we have 2.2 million, which is our shares, the department's shares at Nexa. And under liabilities, there's 26 million that had to be surrendered to National Treasury. But I spoke about the unauthorized expenditure, that is the glaring figure. And just to give some background to that figure on the next slide, Chair, that unauthorized expenditure was in fact due to an infrastructure grant payment made to the Mthonjaneni municipality in May 2010. This was at a time when the department was still part of the department, or was still the Department of Minerals and Energies when the payment was effected. However, with the split, or at the time that the payment was made, it was the end of March, the payments were rejected. It didn't go through in April, it was rejected again, and the payment only went through in May. So technically, that amount of money went to the correct municipality. It was the correct amount. It was the correct recipient. There was a timing difference between the two financial years. The department has written to National Treasury explaining the circumstances and is awaiting condemnation and authorization of this unauthorized amount. On the financial statements, references made to irregular expenditure of 89.75 million. Although the amount is 39.75 million, it is a large amount. It has decreased by 80% since the last financial year. And all irregular expenditure in the current financial year has been condoned. But of this 39.75 million, there is a background to this amount. 99% of this amount relates to lease payments for office accommodation. And this is a technically irregular, although the services were received. What had happened was that when the department split, it entered into a memorandum of agreement with the Department of Mineral Resources that the department would pay the Department of Mineral Resources who would defray the expenses to the landlord. But due to challenges, the department was forced to pay directly to the landlord instead of going through the Department of Mineral Resources, and that technically made the transaction irregular, although the goods or the service has been received to the full value of 39.75 million. The matter was discussed with National Treasury, and National Treasury has given the go-ahead for that amount to be condoned, and that amount has been condoned subsequent to year-end. If I can just move on maybe to the next slide, the one following that, just to indicate that the department has received an unqualified audit opinion, and that unqualified audit opinion in the 2011-12 financial year is also without any emphasis of matters. It should also be pointed out to the Honourable Members Committee that the department has completed an action plan to address all the outstanding Auditor General South Africa findings, and in fact most of these findings were already addressed by 31 July 2012. Also wish to point out to the committee that all the SOEs reporting to the DOE, the department, have also received an unqualified audit opinion. Thank you.
Thanks, Justin. We'll now proceed to Ms. Zungu.
Thank you, Chairperson, Honourable Members. My area of responsibility is the Office of the COO. Office is responsible for governance and compliance issues in the department. We look after the department's strategic planning processes, our implementation plan for our strategy. We look at monitoring evaluation of the department's performance, including the department's reporting of the department's performance. We're also looking at the oversight of our SOEs. The department currently has 5 SOEs. And also finally, we also look at the coordination of our international relations function within the department. Within the area of the strategy and risk management for last year, we managed to make sure that the department holds its annual strategic planning session, which Ms. Mgune has already alluded to. Through that process, we're able to provide the department with annual performance plan, which was tabled in February and also presented both to this committee as well as the PPC. This is the plan that has been implemented during the year, and this is the plan that each of the DDGs will be taking the committee members through in terms of each of the branches that are in the department. Also within the area of strategy and risk management, we are also responsible for risk management for the department. We managed to establish the risk management unit, although with not the necessary capacity, unfortunately. We're also able to establish also the anti-fraud and corruption function within the department. There is assessment for the department, which is the annual activity that every organization needs to undergo, was done also last year, through which we identified the risk register for the department at the strategic level, as well as the risk register for individual branches at the operational level for the department. And this is the document that is normally used by our internal audit function to provide the audit plan for the department. Also, we started the process of establishing standard operating procedures for the various functions in the department. As members will remember that the Department of Energy is a fairly new department. It was our second year of operation last year. So we had to go back to the drawing board to actually come up with the standard operating procedures, what we have and what we don't have. What we had done originally when we moved from the Department of Minerals and Energy, when we split, we did adopt some of the operating standards and some of the systems that we're using there, but we needed to go through the process again of looking at each and every one of them to make sure that such policies, such operating procedures are relevant to the Department of Energy. The challenges in this area for the year, or what was not achieved or partially achieved, is that the implementation of our enterprise-wide risk management strategy for the department was not effectively implemented. As I indicated, one of the challenges we had, we did not have the necessary tool for us to actually manage our risk in the department, as well as also the fact that we did not have sufficient capacity in terms of that. But that has come, we have managed up to now, which is the first half of this year, to implement most of the outstanding issues within that environment. Also, the other thing that we were not able to achieve last year was the issue of the provision of the department's service delivery plan. This is a new approach that has been introduced by the Monitoring and Evaluation Department, the DPME, together with the National Treasury and DPSA, where they are trying to make sure that every department has got a service delivery charter, it has got a service delivery plan, as well as a service delivery improvement plan. What is implemented here, what they're saying is that we need to be starting from some point as a department. Have we engaged all our stakeholders in terms of what are their expectations in our areas of delivery as a Department of Energy? And if so, what has been expected of us and how are we implementing that? So we are still in the process of getting that into place. In the area of monitoring, evaluation and reporting, we produce the quarterly reports, which are also a requirement in terms of every department you have to report on your performance against your predetermined objectives that are sitting in your annual performance plan. The challenges in this area is that as a department, across the department, we, as members would have noticed in the annual report, we were only able to achieve about 43% of our targets in terms of our predetermined objectives of the department. It was not a very good performance from the department, but we're trying our best to improve on that as we move forward. We also did have challenges in the timeliness of the management reports that were introduced in the department. And I've already spoken about the issue of the department standard operating procedures that are also not completed by the end of the financial year as well. In the area of state-owned enterprise oversight, as I indicated, the department has got 5 state-owned entities that report to the Minister of Energy. We successfully went through the normal quarterly reporting processes, the alignment of our strategies within between the department, government and the SOEs. I think the area there that was also a focus for us for last year was actually the finalization of the winding up or winding down. I always get confused now whether it's up or down of the EDIH. We were hoping, as indicated later in the presentation, we were hoping that by the end of the year last year, we should have been exactly a year after the cabinet decision to discontinue the work schemes of the EDIH, not the EDI, just the H part of it, the organization. We are hoping that by the end of the financial year in March last year, March this year would be done with that process. As at the end of the year, we had gone through the process of paying all the creditors that were owed, collecting all the money that were owed to the entity. Unfortunately, on the last month of which was March last year, EDI employees decided to take up the case with the CCMA in terms of what they called an unfair dismissal in terms of the process. So it became a CCMA process that lasted almost right through the year. By the end of the year, we had received an award from the CCMA, which was awarding about 30 of the 90 employees of EDI, of EDIH. And unfortunately, EDI through the administrator and the shareholder, which is the department, who did not agree with what they had said. The basis of their award of the 30 against the 90 was simply the basis that they did not have signed contracts. So they had given them 9 months for senior managers and others got 12 months for the junior staff in terms of their award. And our argument here, honorable members, was that the CCMA was actually awarding people for not doing their job, basically, and punishing those who did their job, because the ones who got an award were the ones who did not have signed contracts, and the ones who did not get anything were the ones who had actually gone through and signed their contracts. So the case is now in front of the Labour Court. However, in the meantime, we've had discussions also as a department with administrator and the board of EDI, which is still in existence. And we are in the towards the end tail of a negotiation of a settlement between ourselves and them. This has gone on for a year. And I think I need to mention that this is in no way the issue of a settlement. It's not that the shareholder is saying that we actually owe them anything. We still believe that they did not qualify for any compensation because they all had signed fixed term contracts and their contracts had officially come to an end. So we are in the process of actually trying to settle this thing out of court just to get people back their lives and to continue with their lives. We're hoping that in the next month or so, that process, if agreeable to everybody, will be finalized. In the area of challenges when it comes to our SOEs oversight, I think I've already spoken about the winding up of the ADIH by the end of the financial year. Also, the finalization of our SOE oversight framework. We do have a draft framework that we are operating at the moment, but what is outstanding is that we are hoping to update or upgrade that with the input from the presidential SOE oversight review that was done. Unfortunately, the report has not, I'm not sure that it's been given to the president yet, but it has not been published, so we are not in a position to utilize that report as yet. So that leaves a gap in terms of finalization of oversight framework. I'm mentioning that because it has was also raised by the Auditor General in terms of finalizing of that process. Also raised by the Auditor General members was the issue of the sector risk management. In other words, they are asking us to consolidate the risk management of the energy family, basically. They're saying that we need to make sure that we align the risk management of the department to that of the SOEs to show that you are addressing the risks that are within the energy sector appropriately. I think the other thing that was not achieved last year also was the issue of the department's compliance monitoring process, basically because we don't have an individual responsible for that. So what we have done now, we have tried to spread it within the available people within the branch to make sure that at least some work is done by the end of this financial year. The last area of responsibility, Chairperson, is in the international coordination, which is the international relations element of the department. Last year was one of our busiest years in that area. As members would remember that we hosted, around about September, we hosted the African Ministers Energy Conference, which was attended by more than 40 energy ministers, both from Africa and some of them from overseas. This was a precursor to the COP17, which was coming only later in the year. The conference produced the declaration which outlined the energy needs of the continent and the political commitment to alleviate energy poverty. The outcome of the conference was what we call the Johannesburg Declaration, where all the countries that were involved made commitments towards their involvement in the area of addressing energy poverty within the continent. As already mentioned, the department did host or co-host the COP17 last year, and the Department of Energy, we had 26 side events, which were done by the department, and the outcomes of which some of them were mentioned by the individual branch managers in terms of the areas of responsibility. We had more than 20 international visits that were conducted by the department last year. And this was part of the department's continued engagement with our national and international stakeholders to ensure access to information. access to technology, access to funding, and best practice in the energy sector, all in the name of contributing to the security of energy supply for our country. Those are just some of the areas of the country that was visited by the department during the course of last year, or were engaged with by the department during the course of the year. And also we've signed a number of international agreements or MOUs in the area of energy as well. Internally, we succeeded in actually coming up with our Department of Energy International Strategy, which is a new international relations strategy for the Department of Energy, and that was approved by our principals, and at the moment it's at the stage where we are aligning it to the government international relations strategy with DICOF. We also managed last year to actually audit all the signed international agreements or MOUs by the department from as far back as we can go. We came out with a very long list, and we went through the process of going through each and every agreement that was signed in the name of energy, be it under the Department of Energy or under the Department of Minerals and Energy, to look at the, whether they are still worth having around or what's the next thing to do about them. The process has been approved by the minister and the DG, and we are in the process of, we've got about two or three that are very old and not relevant anymore, otherwise the others are still being implemented and they are still active. On the next international, on the next slide, we just mentioned some of the agreements or declarations of intent that were signed during the course of the year. I think on that slide, what is important for us to also to mention was the issue of the signing of an agreement between the United Kingdom, Germany, Denmark, Norway, and the European Investment Bank in the area of renewable energy, known as the SARI, which is South African Renewable Energy Initiative. That is, the aim of the initiative is to unlock public and private domestic and international funding to scale up renewables in our country. This initiative was also launched during the COP17 in Durban. The department has participated in the project steering committee that led to the signing of the declaration of intent on SARI. And some of the honourable members might be aware that SARI has actually been residing within the Department of Trade and Industry. It has now been moved to the Department of Energy. We are responsible for the implementation of the initiative. In this particular area, I think what was not achieved during the year was the approval of the International Relations Strategy for the department, in other words, aligning it to the DECO, to make sure that what DECO is looking at is what we're also looking at, try and avoid duplications and also see where we can save resources in terms of saying we don't want to go to attend to a certain country beginning of the year only to find that, according to DECO, that we'll be going to the same country and are also expected to participate. So that alignment is still not 100%, but we are almost there. Also, of course, was the auditing of all of the agreements signed by the department. We had done that. We were done the process, but we still need our internal audit function to make sure that what we have done as a branch is appropriate. And that chairperson ends the Chief Operating Officer's office. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. We are now done with support services specific presentations. We'll now proceed to the call line function presentations of the department, and the first will be Mr. Matubela.
Thank you very much, Mr. Nguni. Honorable Chairperson, honorable members, good morning. I'm going to go straight into the highlights for the year because I also have taken note of the direction from the chair on the time. But perhaps if I can just start by saying that 2011-2012 is the year that as a branch of the department we would like to forget. We wouldn't want to repeat what happened last year, because I think we were tested to the limit in terms of you know, a contingency planning. But I will come to that later on during the presentation. Last year, I think honorable members would remember that during the first quarter of this year, in fact in January 2012, the new multi-product pipeline became operational. That's the pipeline that was built by Transnet. Now, what happened during that year is that during the year under review, 2011-12, is that during the year we were tasked with finding what is called the line fill. Now, when you build a pipeline, you first have to fill it in order for it to be operational. Now, there was an issue of getting that diesel, which was 150 million liters of diesel that had to fill the line. And quite frankly, there wasn't adequate planning by those you know, who built the line, in my view, because at the end of the day, we had to now find a solution to basically the line fill. And we were fortunate enough that we managed to do that, and the line is operational, meaning that the country now has got two independent pipelines that in an event of an emergency, on the one line, the other one can then be used, and which is a situation that benefits the economic heartland of the country. Secondly, what we were able to do last year is the inspections that we had expected to conduct, we managed to achieve all of those, and we even went further in teaming up with the law enforcement agencies to have some sting operations, that's what we call them, but basically is sniffing out areas where people are operating on fuel sales without licenses. And we're able to, together with them, you know, to uncover some of these. However, the challenge now that we are facing, which we had not anticipated, is that we now have to find a storage place for the illegal fuel. We had not anticipated that. One, as evidence, we need to keep it until those have been prosecuted, and it has to meet certain specifications. But all in all, the inspections, perhaps if I can just go by province, in the Eastern Cape we had about 112 inspections done, Free State about 122, Gauteng 379, KZN 266, Limpopo we did 322, Mpumalanga was quite low at 96, and then Northwest with 235, Northern Cape 67, but also that corresponds to the number of service stations. And then the Western Cape, 119. Also, perhaps if I move on, we were able to, in all provinces, all nine of them, conduct petroleum product licensing awareness campaigns. We have a plan of every year conducting at least one, and we're able to do that in all the provinces. The department also participated because we have the responsibility for coal policy. We also participated with the Department of Mineral Resources as well as the industry, mining industry, in the development of South Africa's coal roadmap. And that basically was completed during the year under review. In a bid to separate basically the value chain in the petroleum sector. We, during the course of last year, were able to implement what is called the regulatory accounting system, and we've now been able to introduce a system that rewards each of the various sectors in terms of investment accordingly. What in fact that means currently is that the wholesale sector can no longer go to the retailers and basically claim margins that are due to the retailers. And in fact, this development has made the retail sector more comfortable. We are aware that there is a resistance to this from the wholesale sector, because now the retailers are going to be relatively independent in as far as margins are concerned. And we believe in this, that this is going to actually increase basically the competitiveness of the sector, the retail sector, of the liquid fuels sector, as well as also encourage more SMME development, because perhaps it is not obvious in the country that the liquid fuels retail sector employs quite a lot of people. Over 50,000 people are employed in this sector by retailers, and we think that this is a vehicle actually for job creation that needs support and insulation from vertical integration. We also were able to intervene in the job creation space. We made a commitment last year, Minister made a commitment that for new service stations, even though the law allows us to take 90 days to complete an application, for new to industry sites, we committed that we would reduce that to 60 days and focus on new to industry sites. And in the majority of cases, over 90% were able to do that last year, because during construction, you are able to unlock 150 jobs during construction of a service station. So we thought that it's a contribution that we could make. Then we also we did have a problem in the sense that the processing of applications did take quite a while, but we did improve the turnaround time for processing of applications. But I must add here that we always say those that meet the acceptance criteria, because you find that in the past we used to accept an application and somebody says, an applicant says, I will bring the tax clearance certificate. Meanwhile, you have taken taken the application, and the counting starts of the days, and then the person does not bring a document that is required, perhaps up until day 91, and then we find that in as far as our counting is concerned, we therefore have not met our 90 days. What we've done now is we have insisted that in our regional offices, we do not accept a word of mouth, I will bring this document tomorrow. Because what then happens is that people don't meet the commitments, and there is no pressure on them to actually submit such documents. And then at the same time, we then sit with a backlog which is artificial. We then moved on to say, as a regulatory body, we need to make sure that we are always consistent, that we have a predictable set of guidelines that we use to evaluate licenses. So during the year under review, we developed standard operating procedures for all processes, you know, that are involved in the licensing process internally. And those form part of our quality management system. And we actually believe that this is also going to help in terms of making sure that, you know, we don't have legal challenges in the decisions that we take. We also were able during the year to complete the work related to the blending value, as well as the break-even price for biofuels. That was established. However, we do accept that the support mechanism, which is the subsidy that is required for biofuels, was not finalized. That is not within our control, but we believe that there is going to be, you know, that will be finalized during this year. The regulations on mandatory provision of energy data were promulgated during the year. The carbon capture and storage roadmap was noted and supported by Cabinet during the year. The project charter on information database was also completed. And we also did the liquid fuel charter audit report. A matter that we had not planned for, which I'll talk about when I come to challenges, is the government response to the sanctions that were imposed on Iran by the US and the EU. We had to spearhead the government response in that regard. Earlier on, I said, you know, 2011, 2012 is the year that we would like to forget. And I would say so despite some of the successes that we had. Just in context, we have a finite number of staff members. And Mr. Mguni also, I think, initially indicated that in terms of the staff complement that we need, we are actually not quite there. And this, you know, affects our areas of work, you know, very much so. So we are not able to respond to shocks. Last year, we started the year very well, I must admit. However, July happened. And I say July happened because that's when things started going wrong in the sector. First of all, in July last year, you had the NUMSA strike, which I think something that is becoming the norm is that the distribution of liquid fuels tends to become the soft underbelly, and sooner or later we're going to have to find a solution to that. Whenever there is a labor disturbances, there tends to be a focus on the issue of liquid fuels distribution. So we had to, you know, assist in terms of coming up with contingency plans as to how fuel will actually get to service stations. Secondly, the refineries started having problems one by one, leading to a massive shortage of LPG, which affected industries basically, you know, starting from the retail business, the
restaurant businesses, particularly in this province, were affected negatively. And we had to respond. And we have the same number of people to respond with. Thirdly, what happened was we had the engine fire, which was another refinery issue. And that meant that, you know, distribution or manufacturing of fuels would be impacted. And then lastly, we had the Iran situation, which then meant that, you know, we have to divert our attentions elsewhere. So I think it's within that context that the areas that I call work in progress and areas of improvement need to be understood. So what we did not do last year, which we had planned, are the following areas. One, the IEP was not completed as planned during the year under review. But I think here I would admit that we underestimated the complexity of the task, also given the resources that we have. The other issue which was central here was the data was not provided to us. And it's only after the regulation was promulgated that we have now an instrument, legal instrument, that we can use to force people to submit data. The gas amendment bill was also not completed. However, I'm pleased to indicate that this now has been to cabinet and has been sent back to us to make certain amendments. The Petroleum Products Amendment Bill was also not completed during the year under review, and this was strictly because of the, you know, availability of resources. The regulations on clean fuel specifications were not promulgated as planned. I'm pleased to say that in June, which was 3 months after the end of the financial year, June of this year, this has since been finalized. We had also planned to ensure the promulgation of regulations on mandatory blending of biofuels. Again here, this got delayed. However, in August of this year, this has now been finalized. The Integrated Energy Center program was delayed not because of our doing, mainly because of I think we underestimate the land issues, land transfer issues, as well as the EIA issues that go with these Integrated Energy Centers. And so last year we did not, the ones that we had planned were not completed, and these ones were the IEC in Ulundi and the IEC in Bizana. However, I must once again indicate to the committee that both of those have, during the course of this year, been completed. The strategic stocks framework was not finalized in the sense that it was referred back by cabinet to the department for us to consider and also consult widely within the, you know, the government sphere. The last one that we were not able to complete was mainly due to funding constraints, and that is the 20-year plan. We're not able to complete that. The pricing framework review was not completed, and what I can also indicate here is resource once again resource constraints, because the same people that have to do this review are the same ones who have to respond to when there are emergencies in the sector. The principles for incentivizing cleaner fuels, I think here we did not, you know, I think we underestimated the complexity of that task. The last one was that was we did not do last year was the LPG strategy. I will say here that that was deliberate. We held back. We finished the strategy, but we held it back because we felt that we could allow the market, you know, an opportunity to respond, not always having intervention through regulation. And I must indicate also that the market has since responded. I think it's there for all to see that this year, because we didn't have those disruptions, we haven't had any LPG shortages, you know, during the course of this year. And we don't foresee any in the foreseeable future. In as far as the challenges, I think the challenges that we faced last year, for example, on the 20-year plan as well, the submission of data, industry was reluctant to submit data in the format in which it was required. Internally, we do have human resource challenges, and this is something that is receiving attention. In fact, I think in the rationalization of the policy and planning divisions of the department, I think that we will be able to overcome this challenge. The restructuring is actually going to assist. Then, of course, I did mention the issue of the unplanned outages. Just perhaps to explain what happens when there is an outage, which is unplanned. We have to have basically daily meetings with industry. And those are never in our plan because we don't plan for unplanned, events or unplanned, so many unplanned outages. And then the contingency plans have got to be developed and monitored. And that does take quite a lot of time. The other issue that we saw as a challenge is that I think our quality management system needed to be upgraded, and that is something that we have been doing. The actual development of standard operating procedures is a process that is feeding into that improvement in the quality management system. The last one is the issue of resistance to change, basically. And put it there as inertia, but there are practices that we find which are very difficult to change. I will not talk about what the Competition Commission is finding and referring, but the sector that we're regulating is complex. To change costs does take a bit of time, and that is the situation that we found ourselves in. Chairperson, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Makubele. I will now request Mr. Ombi Opani to proceed with the presentation on electricity and clean energy.
Thank you. Honourable members, I will be doing the electricity and clean energy part of the presentation. Perhaps to start by indicating that we have since restructured within the department, so two of my colleagues would deal with the nuclear and the programs side of things. So going forward, it would be somebody else that reports. And I know that in that previous cycle, we were actually on two programs. So please forgive me if there is a sense that there are some elements that are not covered here, but they will definitely be covered by my two colleagues. Okay, so just to indicate, I'm not going to go into the outline. If you can go to the next, I think that must be a mistake. Yeah, what I will do is I'll cover a little bit of background, and then I will cover the policy mandate, the pricing principles. I think that's the wrong slide, actually. The my presentation is likely is largely around the role of local manufacturing in the green economy as part of clean energy, energy efficiency and demand side management, what we do in that space. Then I will touch on the electricity side, including the restructuring of the EDI program, and then touch on this particular issue around the pricing of electricity, then some progress on SARI, reflect on the clean development mechanism, and then on the appliance labeling component. So starting with the clean energy component, to indicate that we have completed the process of selecting preferred bidders under the Renewable Energy IPP program for solar, photovoltaic, wind, hydro, and concentrating solar power. And what that slide indicates there is relative to windows 1 and 2, what has been achieved. I'm not going to go into the detail, but perhaps just indicate that a few highlights, that firstly, the local content component of the project in the solar photovoltaic space has increased significantly, but at the same time, the tariff that the electricity user is expected to pay has dropped at the same time, which is very good for this sector because it indicates that we are moving in the direction that we would like to do, which is to create local jobs, but at the same time not have to pay a lot of funding around that. If you go to the next slide, please, we do the same for wind. And as you can see there, we have been able to reach a price level of 89 cents per kilowatt hour in window 2 relative to the wind projects. And at the same time, the local content has also increased. Maybe to also indicate on the last two rows the number of jobs that we are expecting to create on a permanent basis, but also during construction in respect of those programs. If you go to the next slide. And we do the same for small hydro. As you might be aware, we do not have many rivers in the country, and that's why this program is only 14 megawatts, and there's no comparative numbers because we've only received one bid under this program. Go to the next slide. Concentrating solar power, perhaps the biggest opportunity for us. The prices have not dropped significantly, 268 to 250 per kilowatt hour. We believe that this is the biggest hope, the biggest potential that South Africa has to replace some of the coal options pursuant to reduced greenhouse gas emissions. And again, as you can see, the local content percentage has increased significantly, and the number of job opportunities around this program has also been indicated there. of interest to the committee, to this select committee perhaps, is the provincial distribution of the programs or the projects led largely by the solar opportunity, both PV and CSP in the Northern Cape, and then we go down in terms of the investment and the local content in the other provinces, including the Eastern Cape, the Western Cape, and the Free State. You might have noticed that there is nothing yet in the other provinces in the last financial year, but there are plans in place, for example, to include Mpumalanga and KZN, mainly around sugar and paper. There's the opportunity there, and then perhaps Gauteng, mainly around the rooftop program for power generation, and then I think that leaves Northwest and Limpopo, which have very huge solar potential as well. The next program, another clean energy, if you like, set of programs, is the solar water heating program. As you might be aware, our target was to install 1 million by 2014, just to indicate that we are on track. What we highlight on the slide, however, is the other problem that we are having to deal with. Up to the end of last year, we had already installed some 258,000. However, the bulk of the systems were imported, and we indicate here what the mechanism will be to try and get the systems to be produced locally. And I apologize, on the other slide there, up to March this year, March 2012, not March 2013. We illustrate, March 2013 has not come yet, there's a typo. We illustrate the provincial split of the systems that have been installed. And of significance there is that I think the year before when we came to report, the Eastern Cape was leading in terms of installations, but as you can see, the Gauteng has now reached 70,000, which exceeds the 52,000 in the Eastern Cape. But I think very significantly is that now there is there's a broader provincial spread. Now all the provinces are now starting to participate in this program. Just to come back, sorry, before you move off, to indicate that the programs are largely funded through ESCOM tariffs from last year, but this financial year, going forward, government itself has allocated 4.7 billion rands over 3 years from the fiscus, and therefore we are intending to make a transition to a new contracting model, as illustrated there, that started in the previous financial year, but this will be concluded this year. Basically, what will happen is that the Department of Trade and Industry has defined a new approach to localization through a standard, SABS 1286, in terms of which only locally produced solar water heaters would be funded through this program. The intention is that we would be able to pre-qualify a limited number of those products and then using economies of scale, we would procure those based on certain criteria, and that would be the only product that would be used. What it means is that those products would necessarily have to be produced through factories that must be set up in South Africa going forward. Okay, carry on. Just in terms of what we have not been able to do under the energy efficiency program broadly, first of all, is that we were not able, as at March last year, we're not able to quantify the actual performance of the program in terms of a number. We report reported, for example, that we had achieved 1.4 terawatt hours, but according to standard practice, this could not be independently verified because the energy efficiency target monitoring system has not been put in place as yet. It has been started, as we indicate there, but we are not really clear how we stand relative to the 15% target that we have set for ourselves. The second point is around the savings verification. So the one side is to monitor all energy efficiency initiatives, including solar water heaters, including energy efficiency in municipalities, energy efficiencies in the domestic sector, and so on. But secondly, we have not been able to verify the savings that have been achieved over and above quantifying them. In that space, there is a verification protocol and a standard that is being developed, had not been completed by the end of the last financial year. But going forward, it would be able to cover, a verification of savings in the industrial, commercial, and residential sectors. The other point is around the energy efficiency campaign strategy. Eskom had started the 49M campaign, but there was a sense that this needs to be extended to cover other licensees, including municipalities and non-utility players, if energy efficiency awareness building is going to take off. And there was a sense that the NEDLAC platform, in terms of what the social partners agreed of, would be the best platform to launch this program that had not been achieved last year. We had also introduced new institutional arrangements in order to address this particular problem. What this slide does is just an illustration of how the energy efficiency program is going to be managed. This started between last year and this financial year, so we had not been able to complete this. But effectively what happens is that Eskom would be responsible largely for the collection of revenues through the electricity tariff, but Eskom would not be the only entity that is responsible for making decisions around energy efficiency, but would make space for municipalities and energy service providers as well. This incidentally is very critical because it addresses another problem, and I'll touch on that when we come to the infrastructure rehabilitation program, which is around municipal tariff setting, because by and large municipalities want to increase their retail tariffs because they claim that they are also looking at energy efficiency and they're also wanting to rehabilitate the infrastructure. So with this approach, what will happen is that all these initiatives would be cleared through this mechanism, and that way we'd be able to make sure that municipalities increase tariffs in a manner that is aligned with their cost of the service. Go to the next slide, please. I'm not going to today. What we also did not achieve is the energy efficiency action plan. And the energy efficiency action plan says, how do you achieve the target that would have been set? You achieve that by introducing various mechanisms or various initiatives, including the campaign, including setting targets for the various sectors, including industrial, commercial, and so on, but that you also have interventions in the residential, and one of those would be solar water heaters. The point about solar water heaters is that currently the number that we keep referring to, the 342,000 that had been installed by the end of March, is largely in the low consumption sector, and as such, we cannot claim that we have been able to save electricity or save energy through that initiative. So the idea is to then install or accelerate the penetration of solar water heaters in the high consumption segment as well. The next point is we had committed to introduce a funding mechanism, and this is what the previous slide talks to, in terms of which we would have a tariff ring fencing process that would not be controlled only by by ESCOM. We have been indicating that last year we would introduce the standard offer program for various energy efficiency programs, including solar water heaters, as an incentive program, and that had not been achieved. I have already touched on the energy efficiency target monitoring system and the measurement and verification system. Lastly, I think my colleague did allude to it as well. The issue around the collection of data is very tricky, and we had not been able to, at that point, we had not been able to achieve it. Can also indicate that a regulation on data collection or compulsory rendering of data has since been developed and promulgated. If I move on to electricity distribution industry targets that we have set for ourselves, the ADAM program, which is an acronym for the Approach to Distribution Asset Management, had been indicated as being our output for the year. We had not been able to achieve that. What this does is two components. The one is to continue with the structural adjustment program. You remember the rates program that has since been abandoned. We're saying that irrespective that the rates program, which is a structural adjustment program, had been abandoned, there is still a lot of work that needs to be done to rehabilitate municipal infrastructure. At the same time, the other component is to fund the program. We have not been able to achieve this. Next component is in terms of mapping where the problem areas lie, particularly within the metros, in order to improve service delivery. We have not been able to complete the mapping of the distribution infrastructure. We have been very successful around the metros, but not in terms of the rest of the other municipalities, including the secondary, the so-called secondary cities. Over and above the funding mechanism and the ADAM program, one of the other issues is to that we had committed to was to introduce the regulatory measures that would break the cycle of underinvestment in the infrastructure and also address the service delivery lapses. This is a process, and in fact we can also indicate that it's only in this financial year that that ADAM program will take off. What the slide does is that it gives some indication of what the outputs had been and what we planned to do. The backlogs are roughly estimated at about 35 billion rand in 2010 terms, but also about 28 billion rand in 2008 terms. And what the slide indicates is a progressive, you know, reduction or elimination of that backlog over the next 10 years through piloting, but also through ring fencing of the electric tariff as illustrated before. Again, some detail around where we stand with this program. At that point, the indication was that by March this year, we should have been at phase two, which would have been where we had completed the analysis and so on, identified critical projects that would have been ready for elimination or for addressing, and we have not been able to get to that point where which we call the end of phase three, which would have been by March 2010. So we're probably tracking somewhere between phase one and phase two, as opposed to being between phase three and phase four. As electricity tariffs increase, one of the mechanisms that we had committed to introducing is inclining block tariffs in order to cushion the poor against the increasing tariffs. This had been approved as a policy instrument, and also endorsed through the social partners process at NEDLAC. Unfortunately, at the level of implementation, we encountered a technology problem with prepaid meters, which ESCOM had been able to address. In other words, ESCOM had been able to reconfigure the prepaid meters to dispense on the basis of inclining block tariffs, but the municipalities have not been able to do that, and only about 60% of municipalities, or rather 60% of prepaid meters in municipal areas have been reconfigured, which means that some 40% is still not dispensing inclining block tariffs. We're saying that going forward, by March next year, which is this, just so that we complete the picture, by March next year, as we consider the new electricity tariffs, which you might already be aware that Eskom has applied for adjustment to, is that we would align this with the electricity pricing policy, and the electricity pricing policy does make provision for cushioning the poor as these tariffs increase. And then we go into a little bit of detail around what we had said in anticipation of electricity tariffs increasing going forward. We had undertaken that we would revisit the multi-year price determination. That's what MYPD stands for. I apologize. It's an acronym for multi-year price determination over a five-year period. That the multi-year price determination would then be adjusted, that we had undertaken to adjust it in line with those principles, those objectives there. Firstly, to ensure that Eskom does not go bankrupt, and it becomes sustainable as a business. But at the same time, the other side of that coin being that we must limit the risk of excessive returns, which would kill the industry anyway, because the electricity consumer would not be able to afford it. Then secondly, the principle being that we had committed to having reasonable tariff stability, in other words, avoiding tariffs that increase substantially over a short period of time, but rather would rather smooth them out in line with the socioeconomic objectives that government has set for it, socioeconomic and macroeconomic objectives of government. And then thirdly, the principle that we had undertaken would have been one to split the risk between Eskom and certain customers. For an example, where key industrial customers, the famous one being BHP Billiton, would have to carry some of the risk that would be related to how we price the electricity between them and other electricity users. Then the last two relate to providing energy efficiency incentives in order to make sure that we make energy efficiency a very useful mechanism for balancing electricity demand and supply. This is what the slide illustrates, is the long-term price trajectory that we believe that the pricing principles would be able to achieve. This has been done in terms of our pricing methodology that was approved last year. So basically what has happened now is that the IRP programs projected in the period up to 2030 are likely to follow this tariff trajectory. Yeah? And the idea is that any tariff allocation or approval to Eskom by the regulator would more or less follow this trajectory, which is a policy a choice that has been made. Significantly, what we are saying is that there is one, there is a cone, the bottom of which represents what we call the affordable price path, in terms of which tariffs would rise to about, based on 2009 real numbers, it's about 70 cents per kilowatt hour in real terms, 2009 must indicate. And then secondly, the maximum, which would be the current electricity pricing policy, where prices would rise to about 120 per kilowatt hour in 2009 real terms. And the idea is to make sure that the prices move more towards the bottom of that cone rather than higher than that. So this is a matter that is currently receiving attention, but it actually started in the previous financial year. Carry on. Then the issue around clean development. Basically, the slide illustrates the clean development mechanism and the projects that have been and the sectors that have been initiated at various levels, those that have been registered and those that have been approved. What this means is that these projects can then go and trade in the carbon emission reductions that would have been quantified in the various spaces. For example, if you look at renewable energy programs, at that point we had not had any single project approved, in other words, under the issuance column, none of them have been done. But this year you will see quite a, well, perhaps the biggest number of projects in that space under the renewable energy IPP program, including solar water heaters and so on. Okay, next slide illustrates what is in the pipeline. The significance here again illustrates, you know, the completion of the initiative to try and finance renewable energy programs in a way that, or clean energy programs in a way that does not necessarily lead to increased tariffs or electricity tariffs, because this pipeline would then largely be funded or also be funded through the CDM mechanism, and it is both electricity and off-grid initiatives in transport and also in biofuels. In conclusion, there are other key programs to ensure energy security. There are other initiatives, for example, including revamping the regulatory framework for new generation capacity. As you might be aware, last year already we had introduced legislation in the electricity space, including ESMO, the Electricity Regulation Act, the National Energy Regulation Act. And we had also introduced various determinations under Section 34 of the Electricity Regulation Act to introduce independent power producers. And then also there are initiatives relating to introducing the solar power concept and its facilitation as a clean energy mechanism. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks, Mr. Pani. We'll now request Mr. Mbambo to make his presentation.
Mr. Mhuni, before he makes his presentation, we sit with one challenge now. The guard has changed, number one. Number two, you know, the chairperson did not time the presentation, which seems to be a challenge to the committee. Now, moving forward in future, would request that when you do presentations, at least if it starts at 10, by half past 11, the presentations are finished, because we need time to engage. Otherwise, with the presentations that are coming, it looks like we won't have time to engage. So it might be a fruitless exercise, and members would say, well, we didn't engage up to the standard or up to the level where we wanted to engage. So it's an issue that we've got to deal with. I think right now it's 12 or after 12, and normally we finish our meetings at 1:45 because some members had to go somewhere to other offices in other areas before they go for lunch. So I'll plead with you that the presentations that are coming would give space.
Chair, my proposal then would be that we focus on those areas that were not achieved, seeing that the annual report was circulated. I don't know if that will suit the committee, that we focus on those areas that were not achieved. This is the chair.
I'm subject to my newly acquired detachment. I would want to hear their comment, but I would support that. I would presume that they agree. Honorable Sinclair.
Chair, I agree with your approach to say that we must look at the time management. In terms of that, Chair, there's a lot of information that we received and certainly a lot of issues that we need to raise. We've gone through the presentation now, not yet, excluding I think two units if you like, and what I want to request is, Jay, I mean, nuclear per se, it's a very important one. And the last one also, which I forgot now what I can't pick up what it is. It's the INAP program. Am I right to say it's nuclear and INAP that's still outstanding?
Yeah.
That we, Chair, maybe try and set up a specific meeting to deal with those two subsections, and that we deal with the ones that's been presented now in terms of questions. So, because there's a lot of issues and so on, and I think all of us just want to need to do justice to that, Chair. That's just a request or recommendation, in fact.
Honourable Fandingen. Yeah, just record yourself.
Chairperson, I can hardly skip the nuclear. Is it a promise that they're going to come back?
Now, in actual fact, they always do if we have got a challenge. I remember at one time Mr. Alpine was not around and they said, we'll do the. They always provide, you know. This is a flexible department, yeah.
Can I take a gap? Our meeting for tomorrow was cancelled, our committee meeting. Can't we keep those two then for tomorrow? Are they available for tomorrow?
I presume they come from Pretoria, and no one fits my clothes here amongst the maids that are here. I'm not sure, but it's up to them. You know, but we don't want to push them that high. I'm sure they might be having other plans, they might not. They might give us another date for these specific two presentations. Mr. Mguni? Now, this is an opportunity. We are acting DG now and take some decisions.
Yeah. I really, Chair, saying that the presentation actually is a summarized version of what has been communicated, you know, what's contained in the annual report. I believe that members do have questions emanating from the annual report, if it's possible or if it suits the committee, humbly so. That those questions where, you know, some explanations are required in relation to specifically to the two areas that were not presented, that we be allowed an opportunity, if possible, to answer those questions. And if not, then we'll have to maybe agree on, you know, other alternative arrangements.
But what's your decision? As a DG,
my view is that I will rely on what my employers tell me to do, because I'm executing the mandate of my employers.
Your employers, they'll tell you then what's going to happen. What should the department do? But at least tomorrow is not possible. Not.
Running, eh?
No, they're not running. I mean, they come from Pretoria for this meeting. They want to go back. They told their spouses and spices that they're coming back to the
spices.
And so they're not prepared, you know, to come back tomorrow. But I'm sure they can find a date any day. They'll just communicate with the committee secretary. That is to
be led to do so.
Yeah.
No problem.
Hello, Abrams.
On a lighter note, maybe we could do some cyber.
Grace, then communicate with the committee. I think let's ask questions on what has been delivered. And I'm now disadvantaged that I'm chairing. I had a lot of questions to ask. How can you have questions before they do that presentation? I'm totally. it's now we've been informed that there's a slot on the 4th of December. There's no Mangao, there's no Midrand by then. Sorry?
Will our annual report debate not be before then?
Grace, is our annual report debate before that? I don't think so. Oh, we can change the date, make it the 25th of December. Honorable Abrams.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. I would be excusing myself in a couple of minutes. If you allow me to just ask one question, please.
See, that's the challenge we face. So, but let's say we'll communicate with the Secretary. Just ask that question, Honorable Abrams.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. I just want to know what criteria is going to be used for cushioning the poor. Thank you.
You can listen, you want to listen to her question, to her answer. You must listen on her behalf.
I thought she was asking me to listen to her on her behalf. Then I'll report to her. Okay. Let's ask the questions now on what has been said. I'll start from my left, right?
Yeah. Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, there's a lot of information in this annual report and the presentation, and naturally one would like to start off to thank the department. It's not the easiest of departments to run and to deal with the day-to-day challenges and uncertainty of energy supply and so on. And I think it was rightly said by one of the officials that it was a bad year. I still remember the 1 year when the Queen had a very bad year. She referred to the Anna Zora Billis. Now I suppose 2011-12 was that for you. But the reality is that I think in general there's a great degree of certainty that although there's pressures on the energy supply in South Africa, some to a lesser or greater degree, that at least there's not that dire uncertainty that was there many years back. And I think one must compliment the department and the minister for that. So, actually, there's some policy issues that I once again want to address. And I must say that it's unfortunate that the minister or the deputy minister is not here. Hopefully by the next round that we will engage, that they will be in a position to come here. But if I can start off with the first one, the first issue that I want to raise, and that is my perception. Our perception remains wrong until proven right. My perception that this department has become a postbox. Now I see when I raise it, some of the officials start to roll their eyes and so on, but if I look at the breakdown of the various allocations to the entities, you know, it's fine to say we've transferred 100% of money to this entity, and we've transferred 100% of money, till the last cent we've transferred it. But the critical issue that we as representatives of the people experience on a daily basis is that once you've transferred that money, be it to a national entity, be it to a local entity and so on, there's serious challenges in terms of the way that that money is being utilized, you know. And I will come to that later. So the first issue that I want to raise is to say, department, well done, but there must be some actions, or there must be some way that you can monitor and also manage those funds. Otherwise, we will run into these difficulties that we experience in terms of the security of the supply and so on and so forth. So that is the first issue that I want to raise. And I will come to some of the specifics in a moment. Chair, then, the other issue is my constant battle, and I think I will leave this earth I think much will be there. With the reality that as a government and as public reps and as officials, that we don't deal, with due respect, acting DG, too harshly enough with a big elephant in the room. And you know who's the big elephant. That is the ESCOM. I think some of you were there with the East Mobile when you had the joint presentation and so on and so forth. Now, I think Mr. Makubela raised the issue in terms of how difficult it is. He referred to inertia in terms of change and so on. But there's an old saying that if you don't manage change, change manages you. And the reality is that this government and this department specifically must have a stronger drive to address the issues in ESCOM. We hear all sorts of stories of, you know, ESCOM is going to go bankrupt and ESCOM was going to do this and so on. You know, I believe honestly that if they must go bankrupt, let them go bankrupt. There will be alternatives. And at the moment as we speak, one of those alternatives is the one that I personally believe that our government, that we all collectively and the government is moving too slow. And that's the one about the implementation of the alternative energy resources, Mr. Obama's department. Now, we understand the difficulties, where we come from, and all those things, and difficult, and so on. Now, I think it's in the right direction, but we're moving too slow, because as long as we don't drive that, we will have the big elephant in the room. So we must look at that alternative and so on. So that is the two remarks that I want to make. Firstly, don't become a postbox. And secondly, let's get the elephant out of the room. Now, coming then to the detail, Chair, and, you know, we've got, as members of the NCOP, the privilege to go to various local municipalities and also doing our constituency work and so on. Now, recently we were in the place where I come from, which is Colesberg, and we visited a development there. Now, to my amazement, you know, I was very proud because I want to boast with the department and say, no, there's a lot of money available, you know. Now, Colesberg is part of the Umzumbombo municipality. Big new development. If you pass there by the N1, you see it there on the right. But I know the officials don't drive so much, they fly over top. So on. But then I was taken aback when the people tell me, but they don't have a budget from the Department of Energy to finish the housing development, Umzumbombo municipality. Now I know we're coming there, Dr. Barnett, I think we're coming to the INEP and I may be jumping the gun a bit with this. But what I want to say is, in terms of the solar water program that was raised, the first issue is there's a lot of uncertainty in the municipalities about what's available and so on and so forth. But the second issue, Chair, is more important, and that's got two elements. The first one is the promise that was made to the people of South Africa that localization will benefit them. And it doesn't happen. We get these solar heaters in, and with due respect, many times they come from the east, and the quality is not so good. What happens? The people don't have water in the morning. What do? They go up and get on the roof to try and fix this thing that they don't understand, and then it's broken. So in essence, our people are poorer off because of the system. So I like the idea that I think some of the officials raised to say, but there must be a stronger emphasis, not an emphasis, a directive from government to say like localization must take place to benefit our people. For us as public rate, at the end of the day, that's one of our big things. You know, I don't need to tell you, poverty is killing our communities. We must find ways to make our people work. There's a lot of incentives from DTI, from various institutions. But at the moment, the specs were there. You must localize as a potential. But what happened? Some way or other, that thing got sidestepped. And there's the what's his name? The ether installed, and it's not to the benefit of people. But linked to that, Chair, is the one that
that says it's not conducive to the South African circumstances. The quality, the water. I mean, part of the problem is the lime content of our water. That creates another challenge for our people. So I'm just a bit overflowing into the INEP presentation that might come, but I think it's got to do with Mr. Afani's department. Yeah, then if I can go to the specific issues in the annual report, and I just came to deal with the issues that we've discussed now. Just give me a second.
Killing him sometimes, you know, when you reach this age, you look for car keys when they're in your hand. Just shift them from one hand to the other.
Yeah. Chair, if I can refer you to the page 101 in the NL report, it speaks there about 100 billion rand over a period of 12 months. I'm not so sure that figure is right. Is it 100 billion? Because if it's that, I mean, it's a massive, massive investment. Yeah. But say then, if I can link that then to the page 103, the issue about the Upington Solar Park and so on. Now, Chair, I think it was just me and the Minister as Members of Parliament that attended the launch of the solar park in Upington in 2009. And I still remember how excited the investors were and so on. We're going to do now a lot of investment and so on. But say I sleep there and I wake up in the Northern Cape. And the stories that I hear there in terms of the proposed solar park and the political tug of war between various role players is not good news for the Northern Cape. So my question to the DG and the is, what is the status of the solar park in Upington? It's a billion rand project. Last weekend, I think the minister was in Prieska. Now there's all sorts of stories that you hear about because this one is not in this camp and that one is in that camp and I don't know what, preparing for Mongo, all those things. But who's suffering? At the end of the day, the people that suffers and we don't have energy certainty and so on. So my question is, what is the status of the Upington Solar Park? I see there that there was approved rollover for 2011, 2012, 18 million. Apparently, DG, I once asked the minister a question and she said that the feasibility will be finished in the first part of 2013. Now, I also liaise with other people that's more knowledgeable about these issues, and they tell me that the process for that feasibility hasn't even started. So it's of great concern in terms of the potential that can be created. I'd say the other issues in terms of the nuclear, certainly like Mrs. van Langen, I will have a lot of questions about that and also about the INAP program. And can I just say that I'm actually extremely happy to conclude to say that I heard nothing about shale gas today.
Hello, Fanny. I'm sure she's going to talk about that.
Chair, thank you very much. But can I ask a nuclear question or two? I'm looking for a report or two. The International An Atomic Energy Agency was here on a visit, and there is a report, and we have information that the report is floating around somewhere. So can we please have access to the report? The annual report is sort of okay under very difficult circumstances, but it's very sad to see that we've achieved 46% of our targets. It makes it very difficult. And then when we look at the refineries, for instance, I'm not sure who's holding who to ransom, because we sit with refineries that cry because they were built for oil from Iran, and then suddenly they must take out a lot of money to revamp the factories or refineries, and there's not a shortage of oil. Things are just going on. In fact, rumor says that the tankers are pumping over somewhere along the sea and bringing that very same oil back to South Africa, and we haven't got a problem. What guarantee have we got that it is not happening? The other question on that same issue is you were talking about the regulations on cleaner fuel specs and that you didn't promulgate, and I'm asking why not? And by the way, there's a lot of regulatory framework backlogs that we've got here, amongst others, something else too that I would raise later. But you did not promulgate. Why? Is industry pressuring you on the regulations? Is it I think it was in the City Press this weekend that they're calling for government subsidy or support on the cleaner fuel thing. So this makes me think that the industry is actually holding the department to ransom. And then there was a big cry from the industry that the department is not publishing the necessary information. In other words, they cannot plan because they haven't got the information to make sound financial investments. Data collection, I think this is under municipalities also. And I think you can start breathing now. I'm not cross with you. The other delicious issue is fuel sales without licenses and the fact that you've got a storage problem for confiscated oil until you have... what capacity are we talking about here, and what quantities of fuel is giving you such a big problem? Then, I don't know if you know, you were talking about a tax clearance certificate that's holding up your system. You probably heard that Minister Gordon said on last week that you can now get it online. It was part of his speech. Strategic stocks framework and the collusion between the industries. So I think we must get that information that you're talking about of the commissioner, so that we can look at the whole big picture and see what it entails. And again, they complained about the publication of figures. Municipalities and electricity will make me very happy if we have an infrastructure rehabilitation program where we can see what's going to happen, because that you say they want to ask unreasonable prices. The point is, Eskom also wants to ask unreasonable prices. And it's the consumer at the end that is forced to pay for it. And I don't know if you understand how and I don't want to insult you, but a lot of the... or your intelligence or your way of thinking. I want to explain, for instance, why small municipalities like Gariep and Bavians have financial big problems at the moment. And I know that Eskom is a big problem with Gariep, for instance. And they've attached property or something of the municipality this very week because they are not being paid. There's a press statement out by the DA in the Eastern Cape about it. The problem is that when a municipality has an indigency population of bigger than 60%. There's a problem. There's no balance. There's no revenue base that can carry that vast indigency population of that municipality, and that's where the constraints come in. And this is where I think that this tough increase of Eskom over a period is going to cause the poor people to get poorer, and we must really look at it very carefully, and we must look at the municipalities, and somewhere along the line we please need a figure of how much electricity we are losing in municipalities that are being stolen. I'm sure it comes out with the Auditor General. If you can help us, it's a vast percentage. It's something like 45% or something like that. So that's the sort of thing that we must stop. The will to stop that sort of crime will relieve a lot of the issues that we have on the ground. For the rest, I think I must also watch the clock so that you have sufficient time to answer. I do have a lot of energy questions outstanding, particularly from what I've read and so on. And I just want to, the one that I've got is the 60% of municipal meters that are fixed for block tariffs. But you know what's happening in townships now is that the poor people cannot pay for all their services. So the municipalities sell them R100 worth of ticket, but that ticket only gives them 40% of the electricity that they are supposed to get. Is this legal or is it not legal? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thanks very much. Now, I want to choose my questions carefully and leave some in the interest of time. Others I'll post for written reply. But the issue of 43% not achieved, I want to link it to 43% not paid of performance bonus. I'm sure you respond whether I'm correct or not, or if it was paid 100% and I would have an issue with that. I want to choose the local content issue, which is 70% now. Is it biased towards the HDIs, or just local content, then it's South Africa. Trip is gone with Mr. Sorenso. The issue of geysers, I think plus minus 258 installed so far, except that those that have been installed, we don't know the percentage of those that aren't working, that already have a problem. So you target 1 million, 260 have been installed, but you and I know that most of them have got a problem. Are we going to meet the target of 1 million? Not unless you lay some rubber. It doesn't look possible. The issue of 2%, this might be on a lighter note, but it's going to be very serious. The issue of 2% target, Mr. Mguni, of people with disabilities. The sector met, I think, about the disability sector 2 weeks ago, and it's going to up the scales. This 2% is too little, no one sees it, you know. So they're going to lift the bar based now on the scientific research. So it might go to 10%. And I think it will go there. So I think you need, the requirement is that minimum. But departments tend to stop at 2%. That's a minimum. Now there is this issue about which you need to consider. Having corporate services, the office of the CFO and the COO. Now this move has got the potential to expand the wage bill and squeeze out expenditure geared for productive economic capabilities. Do you look at it this way? Because all these would sort of deal with administrative matters. Now, you'd call them names, whether it's a branch or a section or a unit, but they're supposed to be one. It's one administrative issue. What is the level of alignment of the budget program structure with the organizational structure? Now, I saw the organizational structure. The deputy minister features among the administration staff. To me, you look at the book, I look at color. The minister is green, and all the administrative staff is orange, including the deputy minister. I think we should have, because those are political heads. Even the deputy minister in that structure should have, if he wanted that orange structure, would have said green and orange, just to set the difference. I want to check the synergy and the complementarities between the department and your entities. Because they could be they could pose an insufficient coordination and monitoring capability over the public entities. Now there is an issue about energy sector legislation such as gas amendment bill, petroleum amendment bill, the energy efficiency strategy. Now these bills, I presume, haven't been finalized, some of them. Aren't they hindering some of the progress? You would say you do this, but you're supposed to be empowered by this police and this bill, and this hasn't happened. So you end up not achieving what you want to achieve. Well, the department received an unqualified report, which is, what do they say? Good, better, best. Oh. Which is good. But the move is towards a clean audit. And there are a few things that have been mentioned on procurement and all that, and lawful expenditure and so on. Somewhere you explain to them, what are the plans of actually, you know, getting next this financial year that you get a clean audit. Clean. There's one question which I think I skipped here. The issue of consultants. Any plans that you see that you would want to reduce them? I think you must have a plan. You know, consultants and good services, they take up, according to my arithmetic, 50% of the expenditure. Consultants and good services. Almost 50%. So we would need to reduce that on now. Do you have a plan to reduce that? Let me stop there and leave other questions. This is your last chance to have me as a chairperson before lunch, so utilize it.
When it comes to the renewable energy, we've been told that there's a huge amount of money lying waiting in the country to start the projects. Now, last time when we were here, I think, I'm not sure whether it was the minister or the, but I think it was the minister that was a little bit irritated, and she was talking about bankable projects, And it almost looked as though when we asked for more to enlarge the quota, she said, but you've got to bring in bankable projects. Now we're being told by the industry that there is a lot of money available, and it was the government guarantees that was actually the delay. So what is the situation now? Are we going ahead now after last week, or aren't we? Thank you.
I'll now hand it over to Mr. Mguni, and also hand it over to the real chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Gamere, for standing in, acting DG. My apology, I was urgently called to the Good Hope Center. There's a big interfaith meeting going on, which the President will address it to. I had to do the welcoming there, so my apologies for that. But we are really pressed for time, members, and I'm not sure whether we will do justice of the answers to all the questions, but I think the department can answer. I want to make a suggestion. Next week we are in the Northern Cape taking Parliament to the people. We are finishing off on Thursday, and I was just saying to the Secretary now that why can't we sleep in OR Tambo and then start Friday morning, maybe at 9 o'clock till about 1 o'clock, with the department, because there's still two programs outstanding, I believe. It's the INEP one and the nuclear and INEP one. We finish that two programs, and then also with the answer questions, the questions. Members, it's up to you. Let me put the ball in your court. We call them next week and Friday at OR Tambo Hotel so that members can get connecting flights after we've done from Johannesburg.
Yeah, Jay, you know my difficulty, I'm building the next government, you know, so but despite that, Jay, you know, I'm from the Northern Cape. Will you be prepared to fly me there? I'm prepared to go.
Yeah. Well look, this is then from the committee budget. So you from the Northern Cape where you are, where you're from originally, we will then fly you on the what to Johannesburg, spend the Thursday afternoon, evening in Johannesburg, after the President's address to the NCOP there, and we start the Friday morning with the department. Is that fine with you? Okay, Honorable Fanningen.
Listen. A lot of flights have been booked for us already, so they will have to be changed to go home.
Well, you can save that ticket because you have to book your own ticket. Am I right? From Johannesburg to Port Elizabeth. You can change it. It's an open ticket. Yeah. There's nothing that's... you can still keep that ticket. Or if you want the committee to save money, then you can use that ticket, or we can pay for you. Honorable Gamera, is that fine? Okay. Acting DG, you and your department, so cancel your coming to Cape Town. We know you love Cape Town. For one, stay in Joburg. We'll come to you in Joburg. We'll arrange the meeting either at OR Tambo Hotel in Joburg, where we will be sleeping. It's a, 20-minute drive or 30-minute drive? But the half train is 10 minutes from where you are to there. And then we'll then meet each other there next week, Friday. That is now a date set out. So that we can then do justice to the presentation and also to your answering answering of the questions in that. Because we don't want to rush now. Because we've got plenary also at 2 o'clock. So there's no way that we can extend. Some people are suffering from diabetes, hypertension, and they need to eat. You know, the Honorable Van Lingen needs to eat. Otherwise, we will have problems with her in the house this afternoon. So I would rather let you have a lunch and be really good this afternoon. So members and the department, we've come to an agreement. The Secretary will then inform everybody, but we can take it as is that it is a date for next week and Friday. Is there any urgent questions that needs to be answered that you want answered, members? Honourable Sinclair?
Just to ask, is the partners available?
They have to be available. They must make themselves available. That's an order that we are giving them. We don't. This is the first time in 3 years that this committee is giving them an order, where every week they get an order from our counterparts. And it's a reasonable request. It's very reasonable. Mazungu hasn't got a problem. She says, I'm at home, it's Friday, I'm at home, I don't have to travel to Cape Town, it's I'm at home.
But Chairperson, with your permission, that part of the order must be that outstanding overseas trip to Spain to go and see these alternate energy models and things.
Yeah,
that
Spain.
They must arrange. Jason.
Spain and France, they must pay. The CFO, the acting CFO, the deputy CFO is smiling, Mazungu, so don't look so worried. He's smiling. Say, if the CFO is smiling, then there's money. Acting DG?
Chairperson, thank you very much for the alternative arrangements. We are prepared to abide by the directive, which allows us an opportunity to also invite the committee to our new building, if possible. But I don't think we'll have any problems in as far. According to the calendar, it will be on the 9th, on Friday. We'll convey that to our principals, and depending on the arrangements between the secretary of the committee and our people at the site, we'll communicate the arrangements or maybe confirm what has been agreed to here. And Chair, we really would like to thank you for allowing us this opportunity. And we'll make sure that all those questions that have been asked receive the necessary attention, and we'll give the responses at that meeting. And thank you very much, Chair.
Now, without any further ado, and if there's no burning issue or a question that will kill someone during the course of between now and next week, no one, Honorable Kamede, you're happy, you're fine? Nothing burning? You want to see the offices? Okay. I'm just worried about seeing the... Sorry? And the lease contract. Okay. I'm just worried. On a Friday afternoon, members tend to relax after 11. So you must have some relaxation. Oh, so there they don't relax after 11. Okay. Honorable Sinclair, any burning stuff from your side? You'll find Honorable Fallingen? No, switch on your mic, and then you will be out of confusion mode.
Chairperson, you've spoken so much, we could have done a lot, so you've taken control in another direction, and we can do nothing. Thank you.
That's why God created chairpersons. Honorable Fallingen, thank you very much. Acting DG, you and your staff, thank you very much. You know, time is always of the essence, and I think that in future what we need to do when we do the annual reports, we'll have to look at days where there is no sitting, so that we can take a whole day. Because the annual report you can't just do in 2, 3, 4 hours. It's impossible. It is really impossible. But if it needs be, we'll camp out at the new place. We'll sleep there Friday if it needs be, and continue on Saturday and on Sunday at your place, Mazungu. With that, I want to thank the staff of Energy, the DDGs, the acting DG, the DDGs, all the directors, the chief directors, everybody present, our parliamentary staff, that for the wonderful arrangements and work, the members of parliament for your contributions and for that, and if there's any additions that you want to do with the presentation, please let us have it in due time, as members won't be in their offices next week. We will be out in a place called DR. I don't know if you know where it is. It is in the Karoo. It is in the North Cape. It is a place that we will say in Afrikaans, God verlaat, a God forgotten place. But it is part of South Africa. We'll be there. It's a place where the Honorable St. Clair's, his constituency, his hometowns and that. We will be there taking the NCOP Parliament to the people, doing our oversight role. So if there's any additions, please, and in future, if possible, we would love to have presentations a week before the time. Or 8 days, minimum 3 days, so that members can have a proper time to go through the presentations and familiarize themselves, and, you know, not just 2 days before the time, acting DG. I know energy, we haven't got much of a problem, but we're just reiterating it. With that, please enjoy your time here in Cape Town, and spend more money here in Cape Town. Spend it wisely. Boost the economy of the Western Cape. And when you go home, use your overdraft here. So when you go home, you just fill it up, Mazungu. Just fill up your overdraft when you go home. With that, this meeting stands adjourned. Travel safe. Thank you very much.